This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free. Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here, and welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us on this battlefield we call life these days. And if you're listening for the first time, we are an international ministry to persons who struggle with porn addiction, sex addiction, adultery. We have ministries for men, wives, youth, and we just started a new group for women who struggle with sexual sin or porn addiction, because women are the fastest growing element, or gender, I should say, when it comes to struggling with sexual sin, particularly in the church. So the numbers today are showing around 40% of women struggling with porn or sexual sin. Today, 20 years ago, that number was 20%. So the numbers are jumping up. So I'll be in the UK from October 10th and then going into other countries for about a month. On the 15th to the 16th, we have a stand at the Christian Resources Show in Sandown Park. And then I'll be giving a live seminar there. October 19th, I give the Sunday morning message at a church in Aylesbury called the Church on Berryfields, Finland. I'll be there on October 24th speaking to youth at an evangelical free church. I'm holding a seminar the next day, and then there are other events. And then November 1st to the 2nd that week, I speak at three churches in Italy, and they wanted me to talk about the rogue Christian. And so if you're in those countries, love to see you, love to meet you. We get contacts from people who are listening to the show in Great Britain and other places, so love to meet you. So this is from an article that the National Day of Prayer wrote on their website, October 2024. And I'm reading, it says, according to Barna Group, a Christian research organization, the average pastor spends 5 minutes a day in prayer, while the average Christian spends 1 minute a day in prayer. And then I saw another, Michael Youssef from Leading the Way, their website. He writes, 5 minutes per day is the average amount of time most Christians spend in prayer. It should come as no surprise then that many of us don't feel close to the Lord. Leonard Ravenhill, the British evangelist, said that no man is greater than his prayer life. And Charles Spurgeon, the great British pastor in the 1800s, said that prayer is the greatest force in the universe, and I agree 100%. We have prayer meetings going throughout the week, and I'll challenge believers often to up their game and make prayer the number one priority. And I agree. No man is greater than his prayer life, and we go through spiritual warfare quite a bit. I had a two-day intensive with a couple I started this past Monday, and early in the morning I got hit physically and mentally, and this morning our team prayed before I left, and one guy said, man, I've been getting hit pretty hard. These shows you're doing today must be pretty powerful. I said, yeah. So on that note, I'm going to introduce to you my guest in studio. Sandy Glazebrook is a 68-year-old married Christ follower, a mother and grandmother, former drug addict, and a survivor of physical, sexual, mental, and verbal abuse. She is active in her church and facilitates a ministry for women who have experienced abuse, and that group is called Mending the Soul. It is a 12-week program to bring hope and healing from trauma and abuse. So, Sandy, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So let's get started by having you share your story.
Okay. Well, as Mike said, I'm 68 years old, and I was raised in a godly family, Christian family, raised in a Baptist home, my sister and I with my parents. And, you know, it was a little nutty at times. They were, you know, we were strong believers, very active, but nobody really knows what goes on behind closed doors. You know, we come to church and we put on masks and we stay involved. And back in the day, you're talking 60 years ago, 55 years ago, you didn't talk about abuse. You lived in it, but you didn't talk about it. And so my sister and I, we saw. My mom was a little unhinged a lot. She smacked me a couple times, but not where I felt like it was abuse. But then again, I didn't realize it was abuse. There was a lot of that between my dad and my mom, more of my mom to my dad as far as physical, you know, throwing things, you know, throwing forks, throwing phones, those kind of things. And, you know, just losing her mind at times and screaming and shouting and pulling out my dresser drawers because they were so neatly done, those kind of things. And then we'd get up and go to church and lived our life. And it wasn't until I, you know, got pregnant before I got married. I was a good kid, good grades. And, you know, I was a virgin until I met my first husband and lost my virginity. And we got married in our church. And I had, you know, had my son. And we tried to make our life work, and he was in the Marines, and we went off and did our thing and lived our life. But unfortunately, drugs and alcohol were part of our life then. I kind of became a prodigal and kind of walked away, even though God was still in my heart. They always say you come back to what you know, and I came back and forth several times throughout my decades of life, this side of heaven. At one point, we lived in Southern California. We moved to Northern California and, you know, thought we were getting away from the dealing of the drugs. He had been arrested when I was pregnant with my daughter. And
what kind of drugs did you get into?
At that point, I had only smoked pot at that point. Mm. Later in life, once we got into Northern California, then cocaine became part of it, and crank. That's pretty much was the drug of my choice. He was dealing. I didn't realize that one thing led to another, and we decided it was time to separate. We had two kids. They were young. So we separated, and he didn't really want the separation. I don't know that I really wanted it, but I felt like I had no choice. We had fallen, you know, separate, you know, pulled ourselves apart from each other. And so during the separation, he was living somewhere else. Unfortunately, there was sexual abuse at that point, and I raped with a gun. He had a gun in his hand in our home that we shared. And so
this was the husband doing this?
Yeah. We were still married. So it's a kind of a hard thing. Like, we were still married, but it wasn't anything. I didn't want that, and it was definitely abuse. And it was pretty traumatic for me. I ran across the street to my neighbors, ran into her house, into her bedroom, and into the bathroom, and was in a fetal position. Mm. She called the police. And the next thing I know, I was in a police car going to the hospital, the rape kit, the whole, you know. Then they put an arrest thing out for him. And it wasn't good. And he's still the father of my kids. So there was a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of emotions going on. And clearly at that point, I knew I was done. I didn't want him, you know. So needless to say, I never really pushed to have him thrown in jail or anything like that. They found the guns, and he had some guns with him as well. But to be honest, that part, from that point on, I don't remember exactly what all played out. I don't think I followed through with pressing charges against him. It was just like, okay, we're divorced. Live your life. So he was in Southern California. I was in Northern California with the kids. And we just went on living our life. A couple years later, we tried to get back together, even after all that. And it didn't work. And so I was a single mom of two young kids. Wasn't going to church. You know, I'd visit church here and there, but just doing my thing, doing my drugs. Not being a present mom, but being a present mom. I was there, but I wasn't there. really wrapped up in my own sinful life. I met a man. He was married. I wasn't. And that's when hell started. And even before we ended up getting married, he was very abusive. That was the first, I mean, that it was terrible. But still, he was a drug connection, and we did our drugs together, and, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll kind of a thing is what it was. And he was married, and I kind of justified it that I'm not sinning. I'm not married. You're married kind of a thing. And she was pregnant. So
you said he was abusive. What does that look like?
Well, the first time he ever hit me, he completely hit me and knocked me off my feet out in front of my house. And then there was a lot of hitting and throwing me up against the walls and those kind of things. And then once we got married, it got even worse.
This is before you got married.
Yeah, like he knocked me off my feet before we even got married. I was dated him for a couple years while he was married. You know, we'd go off and go to little weekend trips, and I was all that, and then he'd flip like that, and you know, so many terrible things. But I married him and drug my kids into that ugly and into that. Thinking it was going to change because now he's not with the wife and he's with me and he loves me. And unfortunately, that's not how it works. And it took me decades to realize that without a lot of good rehab and counseling and a heart change, mm-hmm. you know, a God in your heart, it's not going to change. So we just got married and did the drugs and we were dealing. And you know, I had broken bones and my face shoved up against steering wheels when I was driving, just shoving my face into the steering wheel, you know, going out into the wilderness and pulling me out of the truck when it's raining and dragging me in the dirt and the mud and kicking me. And, I mean, that one incident, I thought for sure I was dead, kind of wanted to be dead, to be honest. And then I had to come back home and my kids were there and it was just bad. And I thought I was going to be left to die. And came in, and then he's all nice, and the flowers, and the, you know, blah, blah, blah. And if the kids asked anything, then he would hit me. You know, he would sit me on his lap, and he'd shove bang his forehead into mine, knives to my throat, broke my collarbone. Throughout the 10 years I was with him, there was just a lot of ugly stuff. But once you're abused, you don't have any self-confidence. You don't think anyone will love you. You know, I was watching my kids go through this, but I was so gone. I was so gone with my drugs and my depression and what the abuse had done to me. I could hardly be a good parent. And during that time, one of his daughters died. She had a brain hemorrhage and we all lived in the same house. And so she collapsed in our home, and, you know, from when she passed away, and she was only 8, it was terrible. And that made everything even worse after she passed and the funeral and all that. It was constant. I was continually bruised, continually lying about why I was limping. Why do you have a bruise here? Why do you have a bruise there? I kept working. I kept doing what I had to do. Then at one point, I finally went to a. I wasn't eating. I was diagnosed as anorexic. I was teaching aerobics. I want anything to make him love me more. Be skinny. Do all the things through all the stress, through all my drugs and not eating right. I ended up having to have a foot and a half of my colon removed in my 30s, so I had to go through that surgery while I was with him. I went to finally got him convinced to let me go to a Christian rehab back in L.A. County in Southern California. So,
for drugs or for more than
or that? Just I think just rehab in general for drugs, for depression, suicide, all those things.
Were you having suicidal thoughts?
There was one suicidal attempt. I believe it's one time when my sister was actually visiting me, and I was taking antidepressants. I was a hot mess, And I started drinking, and I just didn't want to live. Mm. And I ended up in the hospital, and my pastor at the time, Kevin, somebody called him, and some of that's just kind of blurry for me right now, but I remember he was there when they were right before they were pumping my stomach, because I was pretty gone. But I remember he was standing to the side of me, and then when I woke up in my room, he was to the left of me in the bed, and he looked at me, and I'll never forget, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, what are you doing? And he had counseled with me. He knew what was going on. We were going to a Bible class at our church, my ex-husband, the abuser, and he'd come home and beat me up. And that's when he picked me up one day, threw me down, and broke my collarbone. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're talking 30, 40 years ago, you didn't talk about stuff. You know, it was like, oh, I tripped playing ping pong is what the story I told.
So you were with him for 10 years. Somewhere along the line, you started going to church again then?
Yeah, so my church, yeah, it was off and on. I can't tell you distinctively, like, when it happened, because I'd go, and then I'd pull away, and then I'd go. Mm. And every time I went, I felt comfy, you know, like this is where I'm supposed to be. But then he wasn't a churchgoer. You know, so it was one of those. So he went and he said, I'll do the Bible class. And Kevin knew. I shared with him. I counseled with him. He knew a lot. Mm-hmm. But when I woke up, he was there and he just told me, what are you doing? Basically, God's not ready for you right now. You know, like I had tried a couple other times, but it wasn't as severe as this one. Like I was so done. And he said, he's not ready, Sandy. Believe it or not, I believe one day God's going to use you and your story to help other women who are in environments like this. And I just looked at him and said, okay, you know, like, right, you know. And then they wheeled me off to the psych ward. Mm. And then eventually I did leave. I went to a rehab or to a Christian recovery. It was like a two-week hospital stay. So I was in the hospital because I wasn't eating. They were threatening to put IVs in me because I just didn't care. So I did all that. When I went home, I stayed a few days, and in the middle of the night, pretty much, I got my daughter and I packed a few things and I left. Mm-hmm. Now, in the midst of all that, there was a man that I met in rehab who was a believer, and he was jacked up too. You know, you're not supposed to do that kind of stuff, right? But if nothing else, to this day, I thank God that he was there. Mm. Because if nothing else, he gave me the courage to know that somebody else might not treat me that way. And to this day, I believe that that was why that relationship happened. And we ended up in a relationship. It didn't last long because we were two people that shouldn't have been in a relationship. But I left and ended up going to my sister's. And then I don't know, I think it was September of 95, so like 30 years ago. Mm. My sister and I got in the car and went back to the house because I left everything. And went there knowing he'd be at work. I had the key, he hadn't changed the locks, and went into the house and grabbed whatever I could. Grabbed the van. I had a van. It was in the garage, and one of the seats, the third seat in the van, was gone. It was on the floor, and I had to literally lift that thing up by myself because my sister didn't come in the house. Her husband said, "You can go. You stay parked away because of worry. Like, what's going to happen? He didn't want anything to happen. He didn't want anything to happen to me either. But you know, he had to take care of his wife. So she watched from down the street in a car, and Pastor Kevin was part of that, helping us get all that taken care of. But I pulled that big old seat up and I shoved it in the car and we left. And I filed for divorce and, yeah, and that was 30 years ago. Mm. And then life continued to move on. Then I was back in Southern California and was in that other relationship that lasted about a year and a half or whatever. And then I was single for the first time in my life at 40. My kids were with their dad. And I finally started going, okay, church. And I started going to church. I was working. I worked the whole time. And, you know, through it all, it's God never left. And that, you know, it's true. he never leaves us. We leave him, you know. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought of myself as a prodigal, but I was an adult one, you know, and just doing my own thing. And so I thought, okay, this is it. And I started trying to get my act together. And, you know, it wasn't time yet. And I wasn't doing hardcore drugs anymore. And I wasn't smoking pot or any of that. I'd go out and have a drink, and then I would get drunk. But I was never like an addict to booze. Well, that wasn't my drug choice, right? It was drugs was my choice, not alcohol. And I met my current husband. He was a neighbor, and we've now been married 26 years. Mm. And, you know, you bring in, I was married two times, and I came in with abuse and anger and, you know, just the, you know, the shields up, the things up, and no, you're not going to talk to me like that, those kind of things. But after 26 years, we're very proud of ourselves. We got through it. He brought his own stuff. He had an ex-wife and a child, so we brought blended families together and worked through a lot of our stuff. But, you know, there's no marriage that's perfect, and we're both, you know, Sam and I are both believers, and we're active in our church, but it took a long time. And even after he became a believer, it was hard for him to give up his flesh, the world stuff. And as you said, we are attacked every day, constantly. Mm. You know, so and I agree, if you're not in prayer, if you're not in the Word, if you're not playing Christian music, if you're not active with other believers and, you know, surrounding yourself with like-minded believers, it's real easy to
veer off.
Yeah. I mean, every day when my husband and I pray in the morning, I just say, Lord, keep me on the narrow path. Whether you're pushing me from behind or you're yanking me, you know, whatever, keep me on that narrow path towards you, not because it's too easy. You can go a lot of different ways very quickly. Mm. So, you know, and now, you know, I'm doing Mending the Soul. I quit my job about 10 years ago, and I was like, okay, God. And all along, I kept thinking what Pastor Kevin told me. One day, you're gonna do something with all of this. And my first opportunity was in Southern California for U-Turn for Christ. That's a ranch that Calvary Chapel put together. Mm. And they had a women's ranch and a male ranch. So we'd go and counsel the women. So I was chosen to be part of that group. So that was the first time. And it was like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. And then we moved to Arizona and kind of have to start all over again. Like, okay, find our church and all that. We've been part of Calvary for, I think, 19, almost 20 years. And after I quit my job, I was like, Lord, what's next? And our pastor's wife said, hey, have you ever read this book? And it was the Mending the Soul book. Mm. And I said, no. She goes, read it. And I read it. And it was like, okay, whatever. You know, not a big reader. You know, I wasn't really a big reader. And that was like kind of over my head. And I wasn't ready. Obviously, I wasn't ready yet. So I read it. And I said, okay. Well, a couple of years later, then the time came, and there was a conference with Stephen Tracy, who developed, he and his wife Celestia developed Mending the Soul in 2003. Mm. And he had a conference here in Phoenix, and so I went with another gal from church, and he spoke, I listened, I said, oh my Lord, this is it. This is what I am called to do. This is what God wants me to do. Mm. And that's kind of where it started. And
so in a minute, talk to the woman who's listening to you right now. What would you say to her? And she's going through where you were.
Don't lie. Find someone you can talk to. Be honest and transparent with yourself. Lean into God. Get on your knees and look up, because he has always been there and he's there now. And don't waste another minute on someone who is hurting you physically. Because they're going to keep hurting you. It's not going to stop until they get help from Jesus.
So get out and get moving right
yep.
now.
Don't look back. What do they say? Run, Forrest, run. That's what I say. Run, Forrest, run.
Mm. Well, Sandy, this has been very powerful. I'm sure it's, at some point it's got to be some difficult. I mean, you went through some pretty traumatic things. Thank you for being willing to share this. And my friends, we're going to be continuing this conversation with Sandy next week. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org, email us at email@blazinggrace.org, or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.